For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Power Punch. Get charged up on the truth. Now, Power Punch with Larry Behrens on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Power Punch for another week. Is it part of your regular balanced diet by now? I hope so. I'm so glad you're here with me. My name is Larry Behrens. I'm Communications Director for Power the Future. We're an organization that advocates for America's energy workers, and we like to make fun of leftists. So here we are. Well, I should say I like to make fun of the leftists. We're nonpartisan at the organization, but the left green agenda reaches into everyone's pockets, and we're going to cover it all today. We're going to talk about EVs. We're going to talk about how the Biden administration says there's no problem at the grocery store. And mostly, we're going to talk about what everyone else has been talking about. And there's directions I can take this, right? There's directions of obviously the escalating situation in the Middle East. And we're probably going to be talking about that because there is so much to unravel there, courtesy of Joseph Biden or Robert Peters or whatever alias he uses this week. Oh yeah, we all forgot about that, right? We forgot that he literally made up names. And so there is a lot to unravel there, but there's also obviously the horrific attack in Maine. And when you look at just the, I mean, I don't want to be insensitive. We obviously all hurt for the victims of this absolute monster of a person. And this is not to diminish that in any way, shape or form. And I even think that the my friends on the left would agree with that, but we have to be upfront with just their knee jerk. And I think they cut and paste their reactions when such a terrible, horrific tragedy like this happens. And their first thing is gun control, gun control, gun control. I'm sure it's been on everyone's lips this week. The people who were for it before are for the people who are against it before, but we haven't really taken a look at, you know, where does Joe Biden stand on it? Now I know Joe Biden will cut and paste and talk about gun control, but let's talk about the guns. Maybe he really doesn't want to control. We'll get into that here in a bit. But let's first talk about how popular he is. And boys and girls, he is so, so popular. So I mean, if you like took a poll of their cheerleaders at my college and asked them how popular I was, I would get these numbers. These would be, I would have Joe Biden numbers among the young ladies back in the day. So President Joe Biden's approval rating among his own party, among Democrats, it has taken a huge hit this week. It's down 11 percentage points. So it is down to 75%. So that's still obviously huge. 75% of Democrats support Joe Biden. Let's get into the other ones. Independents say they support Joe Biden to the tune of 35%. And Republicans support Joe Biden, not making this up. This is all from Gallup, by the way. They support Joe Biden to the tune of 5%. By the way, if you could find me some of those 5% Republicans that support Joe Biden, that's like a unicorn. I don't think it exists. You've never seen one of those Republicans and Bigfoot together is all I'm saying. They do not exist. But the reason it has tumbled, that brings in Joe Biden's final score to a whopping 37%. And as someone who is generally not a fan of Joe Biden, particularly what he's done to our nation, 37%, I still feel it's too high, but Gallup is freaking out and all the leftists are freaking out because that's, you know, the lowest. It's tied for his lowest. In fact, it says Biden's approval rating has been mired in the low 40s for much of the past 2 years. Wonder why? Including the latest 37% job rating and identical reading in April. So it's fallen before 40%, a lot of numbers at you, sorry, 40%, below 40% four times in 33 readings since Joe Biden has been in office. And you can go back to when he first came in office and had supposedly high approval ratings. And you know where it started, where he went underwater, as we say in the political world, below 50%? It was in about August 2021. And what happened about August 2021? That's when gas prices really, really started to sting. And in case you're wondering, and here's the bad news about it, because as I mentioned, as you know, 37% seems high to me, but this happened, this rating was taken between October 2nd and 23rd. So pretty much the whole month of October, a good chunk of it. And so obviously it included voters who were informed or had, were at least aware of what was happening in the Middle East. And that's what's troubling to me. Now, it's not troubling to me that Joe Biden has 37% approval rating. He's earned that much worse. But what's troubling to me is that he's tumbling because he's decided to stand with Israel. This survey took place mostly after the brutal attacks from Hamas terrorists. And it says here, Biden has faced criticism from some members of his party for aligning too closely with Israel and not doing enough for Palestinians. So Joe Biden deserves a low approval rating. Make no mistake about that. But the fact that his own party now is abandoning him, and they're not abandoning him because of gas prices. They're not abandoning him because of Afghanistan withdrawal. They're not abandoning him because of Hunter Biden. They're not abandoning him because of any number, just the absolute infinite list of screw-ups this administration has. They're abandoning him because they took a look at what happened in the Middle East, and they decided that they don't want to stand with Israel. And there's enough of them that it impacts his rating. You have to ask yourself to the Democrat Party, you have to ask yourself, I mean, what is it about this? Of everything else Joe Biden is on the hook for, this is where you guys start to abandon him? And that's troubling to me, as it should be to I think any rational person. You have the nation of Israel trying to defend itself, and you see what's happening at our universities, including in St. Louis, right? You see what's happening at our universities, and you see these young kids who just have no clue about life. Yeah, that's right. I'm old enough I could say it. No clue about life. You've been indoctrinated. You're getting your news from TikTok, and you have to, you know, I get it. You have to placate to those professors. But you still have to call wrong, wrong. You still have to call evil, evil. And you ask yourself, Larry, what does that have to do with what's going on? Well, not a whole ton. But it does have to do with the reactions. And so as we discussed, the reactions coming from the left are about, well, first, let's get into it a little bit with this clip. This is from this week. I think Congressman Mike Lawler here, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I think he has the correct position as they were taking up the resolution to support Israel.
Children, babies, slaughtered. The worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. Israel has a right to exist, a right to defend itself. We have members in this body that do not believe that. Members in this body that cannot muster the courage or the strength to condemn the slaughtering of babies, but have the audacity to repeat a vile and disgusting lie that Israel bombed a hospital. They are not worthy of serving in this body. And the fact that we have people that didn't even sign on to this resolution tells you everything you need to know. If you cannot stand with Israel, our greatest ally in the Middle East, a beacon of democracy and hope and freedom, you do not belong in this body. Those members should resign in disgrace.
So real quick, resign in disgrace. Let's let those words linger in your mind for a little bit. But before we get there, as Joe Biden and every other leftist who abandoned support for Israel now calls to take away our guns, this also happened this week. The House Committee of Oversight and Accountability, I'm not making that up, that's their real name, they are opening a probe into the Department of Defense. Why? Why? They're checking their process and policies to ensure that American military aid and weapons are properly distributed abroad. They request a staff briefing. Again, I get it. You know, as far as punishment goes, Washington, we've requested a staff briefing. We took action. Staff briefing? Anyway, but their intentions are right. They're trying to see if U.S. manufactured weapons are being redistributed and end up in the hands of Hamas. So as we look at the left, and I'm sorry I've sounded discombobulated, I'll try to bring it all together. As we look at the left and we see that they clamor for gun control here in the United States, do they clamor for gun control when it's the Taliban? Do they clamor for gun control when it's Hezbollah? How about Hamas? Do we need common sense gun control for Hamas, leftists? Why is it that common sense gun control is only applicable to American citizens who will follow the law? And so that's where I'm at in with the situation in Maine. Obviously horrific, but they just sent out this, it's time we act on common sense gun control. Really? How about we start with the billions you left to the Taliban? Can we start that gun control? Because now we see where it's ending up in the world. Shifting gears. Remember I told you, keep it in your mind, resign in disgrace. Well, not only are there concerns that our guns are ending up in the hands of the Taliban, let's take a look at what else is heading up in the hands of terrorists. This is a story that showed up in the Jerusalem Post, and I'm going to read from a commentary on it, so it's not just a straight news story. But this is a story that showed up in the Jerusalem Post, and it shockingly hasn't made any media outlets here in the United States. I'm going to share it with you right now. This is a place called the Independent Canary Mission. Canary Mission. I'm not mispronouncing that. Independent Canary Mission. They issued a report this week after an investigation into Representative Rasheeda Tlaib. That's right. They are primarily investigating anti-Semitism on college campuses. And yeah, they've been pretty busy this week, I would assume. And so what they've done is they've looked to the reports of what she has done with her fundraising in the past. Here's a story that we should all be talking about, but that no one is talking about, because Rasheeda Tlaib, and I'm going to mispronounce her name all show, so just get cozy with it, and her friend Cori Bush, right? Were they among the few that voted against Israel? I mean, the few. How fringe and how crazy they are. Well, now we can see why. She's been linked to Hamas activities. So this Canary Mission, they can confirm that Tlaib has extensive fundraising ties to Hamas supporters, and she employed no less than three Hamas-linked activists to fundraise for her 2018 election campaign. Well, when you say linked, what do you mean, Larry? I'll tell you. One of the people on her campaign spent 8 months in prison for alleged connection to Hamas. Connection to the organization that brutally murdered civilians, raising money for an American congresswoman. And everybody wonders why. Why is she just believing that hospital story? Why, I bet she's calling for a common sense gun control for you and me. She had additionally used a pro-terror Facebook page to raise funds for that same campaign. She gave the founder of that Facebook page a position as chairman of finance committee for her campaign for Congress, and he used it to promote 12 fundraisers in 8 states. Anti-Semitic campaigns, they're raising money off of it. And in 2015, she co-founded the Detroit-based anti-American, anti-Israel, and pro-terror hate group Black for Palestine. A co-founder used the group to conduct activism with members of the Marxist-Leninist Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which is a designated foreign terrorist organization. Isn't it amazing? Now, when you think about the leftists love it, we're going to use them against it now. They love intersectionality. That's right. Like, your cause is my cause, even though we're not talking about the same things. Isn't it amazing, the intersectionality, the connectiveness for those of us who speak English, of the people who push the Green New Deal, of the people who call for gun control, are just magically the same people that hire folks that did time for alleged ties to Hamas? Isn't that amazing? I'm sure it's just coincidence. Well, speaking of pushing radical thanks to the Green New Deal, we're going to get back on topic here in a little bit. We're going to talk with Jason Isaac. That EV that you're looking at, I'm sorry, that sticker price is not the real price. They're out with a great report this week. We're going to talk with them coming up next. Keep it tuned right here.
Get more Power Punch at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Power Punch with Larry Behrens on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Get charged up on the truth. Power Punch with Larry Behrens on Newstalk STL.
Welcome back to Power Punch. So glad you're here with us. Thanks for joining us today. We got a fantastic guest, fantastic things to talk about. Larry Barron's here with you. And joining us today is someone I'm a fan of, and they do fantastic work. And I'm going to read the intro, and we're going to get into it because they unveiled a study this week that will blow your mind when it comes to the left's push for electric vehicles. We're talking today with the Honorable Jason Isaac. He's director of Life Powered. Now, that's a national initiative of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and it's all pointing to one direction: to raise America's energy IQ. And I can tell you, Jason, your latest report certainly raised my IQ. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. And so what the report is, and you can find it online at their website, but what it is, it looks into, once you take in all the subsidies coming from the feds, the state, from everywhere, not just the ones that go to the consumer, they took and looked at the actual price tag for that electric vehicle. And the numbers are mind-boggling. And Jason, I'll let you just unveil that. But you know, the one that sticks out to me is, what is the actual cost for that EV that folks may see on the lot right now?
Yeah, well, the actual average cost that you're going to see on a lot is about $50,000. This was just reported today. There was some updated pricing information, but that's not the true cost of the vehicle, which you may think, oh, I don't own an EV, but guess what? You're paying for some wealthy EV owner to drive one. Mm-hmm. Because of all the subsidies, the market distortions from the federal government that are trying to force car companies to go all EV. Ford and GM just continued to get hammered. Ford's profit would have been more than double what they reported had it not been for $3 billion of losses from their EV division. They continue to shed money. So that $50,000 average cost for an EV, then add about another $50,000 in cost that they're using credits, subsidies, and other mandates. And then on top of that, the $32,000 on average that car companies are losing. Yep. I use a Lightning Ford as an example, that electric Ford. But it's at minimum, that truck cost $172,000 to produce. But people are only paying only $92,000 for it. But taxpayers, we're paying a lot more, again, for some wealthy six-figure earning individual to drive a nice fancy gadget. And again, we're the ones paying for it. We're paying for it in higher cost for our tax liabilities and higher cost for internal combustion engines.
You're absolutely right. And a study came out, I think, or the Wall Street Journal mentioned a study last week before I was able to read your report. I mean, the average household income for an EV owner is $180,000. And so when you talk about the tax breaks for the rich, I mean, I would put this one up there as probably the biggest one that could be out there. When you look at that, in most cases, they are getting half. I mean, and the price is still outrageous. You're absolutely right. But in the case of the F-150 Lightning, they may be getting half off, like 50% off the actual cost to make the vehicle. And the consumers say, well, I'm only getting, you know, $7,500 or whatever from Joe Biden or however many thousands from my state. But your point is exactly right. It's the manufacturer that took in so much of that money, and we're all vested now. Now in it. And how does this jive? And I'm going to ask you to prognosticate a little bit, but we've seen the reports that came out this week, along with your study, talking about the caveat of EV sales are growing, but not growing as fast. And so manufacturers are freaking out. And we'll talk about that shifting blame a bit when they talk about why EVs aren't selling anymore. But what this is obviously not sustainable. And so, or maybe the left feels that it is. What do you think someone who could look at this rationally will look at the policy and say needs to be done? Because the left is pushing this even harder.
Well, we've got to stop these incredible multiplier credits and the corporate average fuel economy standards. I was interacting with some people on what used to be called Twitter yesterday, and they're like, oh, Tesla's profitable because they're, you know, mostly produce their vehicles in the United States and they're high quality. And then it's like, well, what about the $1.78 billion? They would not have been profitable in 2022 had it not been for some government-created market where they get to trade credits. this is an absolute awful thing. It goes against every measure of free market capitalism that's out there. But the government has created this market, and it's what Tesla is doing. And they're because of the multiplier. The Wall Street Journal reported on this on Monday. I thought someone might have leaked our paper to them because we highlight this in the paper. For every gallon of fuel an electric vehicle saves, they actually get credit for 6.67 gallons. And then because of the corporate average fuel economy, or called CAFE standards, Tesla gets to sell those credits to other automobile manufacturers that aren't improving their fuel economy. And so that's where they got almost $2 billion of revenue from Tesla in 2022. Wow. Selling those credits to other car companies. And if you and I want to buy one of those cars from another car company, that car costs more because they had to buy these stupid arbitrary CAFE credits to meet some federal requirements. It's just amazing. And then Toyota, the chairman of Toyota, is it's one of the reasons I bought a Toyota product this year, is because someone is stepping up and saying, this is absurd. This all EV push does nothing. For every one electric vehicle that they make, the components that go into that, they could make 90 hybrid electric vehicles, which would have a more significant reduction on emissions. If you're concerned about that kind of thing, I'm not. I live a high carbon lifestyle. I think the rest of the world should too. But if you're concerned about maybe reducing pollution or just having a more fuel efficient vehicle, then hybrids is the way to go. But the federal government, the United States government, has pushed automobile manufacturers to go all EV or just go away. And who's going to be left on the hook is you and I, the taxpayers, the ratepayers, and the consumers and buyers of, you know, internal combustion engine vehicles.
Yeah, so much great stuff there. As I read your report, the price tag on the car was the thing that really stood out to me, but that multiplier effect. And I think, you know, generally, folks who've worked in government do understand, like, where do these weird numbers come from? Where do you get 1 gallon of fuel equals 6.7? Well, and the best way I can explain it is that's how they figure you have 2.5 children. I mean, the way the government looks at things is not really reality, and they just throw these multipliers on these things for money. But what blows my mind too is and I'll just say it, the carbon credit indulgences that these companies are buying and or taking credit for and or selling, because that is in their mind, in the leftist green agenda mind, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you have floated enough money to make it okay. And that's why, you know, we've called them indulgences with these carbon. And so not only are they taking advantage of them to try, you know, for the PR value of it, look at how carbon neutral we are when really we just spent $1 billion to Elon Musk to, you know, quote unquote, make us carbon neutral based on this fuzzy math. But it really, I mean, in all honesty, I agree. I live a carbon intensive life as well. But if I was a leftist, I would be mad about this fuzzy math that they're doing, the gigatons that it takes to, you know, that you have to mine to get all these EVs. And I would also point out too that this is the crowd that consistently tells us, why aren't the rich paying their fair share? Why aren't they paying? And you had, I think it was $22 billion your study found out that is being left on the table that would be revenue if all of these incentives were either removed or if people actually paid what they were worth. Is that the right number?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm looking at the charts again per vehicle, but yeah, you're right. And then per gallon, but the costs are astronomical about how many billions of dollars that these EVs are getting credits for that are being left on the table. And you're right. It's, you know, I love it when the left talks about paying their fair share, but people are certainly not paying their fair share. Even when you get into the cost of per gallon equivalency, you know, everybody's like, oh, my EV is so much cheaper. I heard this so many times. My EV is so much cheaper to charge than it is to get gas. Well, yeah, it's about $1.21 equivalent in electricity. But then you get the charging and the metering costs, and you add another $1.38 to that. Well, that's still cheaper than gasoline today. You know, when you're at, you know, $2.60, that's cheaper than gas today. But then when you add in all these other costs that you and I are paying, that the ratepayers are paying, the tax credits, the avoided charging infrastructure cost, the transmission lines, distribution costs, mandates from California, and the 17 other states that just automatically adopt California laws. I think they're called the Section 177 states that have just said, okay, whatever California does, we're going to go with that. And that's 17 states in the District of Columbia that if they say you're going to go 100% electric vehicle, then those 17 states in District of Columbia are going to say, okay, we're going 100% electric vehicle because that's the new California regulation. Doesn't do anything to improve the environment. It actually makes it worse. In my opinion, it doesn't do anything to mitigate a changing climate, but it does increase the cost of everything. So our study shows that it's $17.33 per gallon for an EV when you consider all of these other costs that the EV owner's not paying, that you and I or people that don't own EVs are paying for. It's astronomical. See, they're clearly not paying their fair share. If they were, they'd be paying $17.33 per gallon equivalent of fuel, and they'd be paying an additional $48,000 to $50,000 per car.
Oh, Jason, loving the earth. You can't put a price on loving the earth.
Could you? I know. And you mentioned that the mining and the stuff that goes into batteries. You know, for every electric car, Mark Mills has written this from the Manhattan Institute, done extensive research. It's 500,000 pounds of materials that have to be moved to produce one 1,000 pound EV battery. 500,000 pounds of earth has to be moved. It's just incredible. In comparison, internal combustion engine consumes about 0.2 pounds of liquids per mile. So yeah, they just don't make sense. But unfortunately, the federal government has embraced it and is now forcing it down our throats.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one thing before we wrap up here, I wanted to talk just real quick. Where can folks find the report? Because this is fantastic. And if you can't read the whole thing, read the highlights of it. Where can folks find it, Jason?
You find it at texaspolicy.com or lifepowered.org. The title of the paper is Overcharged Expectations. It's been getting a bunch of traction from groups like Disclosed TV, Fox News, members of Congress are sharing this paper and the screenshots that are in it and some of the graphs. So it's been millions of people have viewed this over the last couple of days since we released it. And so it's just getting a lot of attraction, a lot of attention. And I hope the ratepayers and taxpayers and internal combustion engine, vehicle purchasers are following along and realizing and getting mad. And I hope Congress acts to pull back some of these credits.
Absolutely. So much interesting stuff there. And I don't think a lot of folks know that their decisions for their vehicles in a lot of states are actually made in Sacramento and not in Washington or at their state house. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on the report.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be on.
And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Get more Power Punch with Larry Behrens at newstalkstl.com. This is Power Punch on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Get charged up on the truth. Now, Power Punch with Larry Behrens on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Power Punch. Glad to have you with us as the last segment. You know, it's going to be a good long segment. We're going to get cozy together. If the weather is chill, well, thank an energy worker for keeping you warm. I was just a short story. Come on, gather around, kids. Story time with Uncle Larry. I was walking around downtown of a capital city, a state capital city this week. It may or may not rhyme with Jefferson City. And I saw something that I just love to see. And I wish in this case, radio, we could just show you the picture, but it was train cart full after train cart full after train cart full of coal. And I thought to myself, number one, thank goodness, because as our furnaces crack on this weekend, that is what's going to keep us warm. You wonder where your power comes from. They're thinking ahead on it, and men and women are working to deliver it right now. But number two, and this just warms my cold heart. Michael Bloomberg would hate that sight. He would just hate it. Mr. Billionaire is, and sadly, it's becoming more rare because of people like him. This year, Michael Bloomberg put out $500 million. That's $500 million to undo coal in the United States. So if you're warm today, it's probably because of coal, and Michael Bloomberg can't stand that. And he's going to send money to make sure that it doesn't happen. And so I just want you, as we get into the last segment here, we're going to talk about a lot of things. But as we get into the last segment here, let's talk about Michael Bloomberg wants to do for energy what George Soros has done for crime in the United States. It really is that simple. You have a billionaire who is going to spend in local races, spend in local office, already does, right? But now he's going to spend even more. He's going to put hardworking men and women out of a job at a time when prices are insane. Yeah, we'll get to inflation. Hold tight. It won't. And he's going to do it all with no repercussions himself. This is the green scheme all around. And we talked about EVs. And we, again, do you really think it's a coincidence that when you look at the Hamas caucus in Congress, that's the Green New Deal people? They are one and the same. I feel like those old episodes of Scooby-Doo where they take the mask off the end and say, who is the Hamas caucus? Oh, it was you all the time, old man Green New Deal. They're going to try to get away with it, if not for us meddling kids. Something I didn't get to quite cover with Jason, I want to share with you. There is a story, and you need to be savvy of the trick that they're trying to pull. There are stories coming out of EV sales declining, right? We see it. Ford, GM, a whole bunch of other companies are cutting back on their EV investments because they see the declining sales that are happening, and they think, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be making all of those because, lo and behold, people aren't buying them. And lo and behold, you know, even though we're getting a whole ton of money from Uncle Joe Biden, well, here's what the press is saying about him. Right? I don't want to give him credit if I don't know, because we're going to make fun of him. It's Reuters. First, right out of the block, high interest rates are derailing the ambitions of climate regulators and automakers to accelerate the shift to electric vehicles. Oh, no, no, no. It's not that it's a super lame product. No, 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 no. It's not that we don't have the money to afford it. Thanks, Joe Biden. No, 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 no. It's high interest rates. By golly, if we could just, you know, shoot shucks darn. If we could just get those interest rates lower, EVs would take off. No. No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. But that's the excuse they're going to do because they know what's coming, right? So they're saying, this was last Wednesday, Honda and General Motors announced they were ending a $5 billion plan to develop lower cost EVs. Lower cost? We don't need those. And keep in mind, and I was going to ask Jason this, if you look at a $50,000 EV and you realize, you know what, it's probably about double that cost, the real cost of it. You know, Joe Biden sent them a lot of money. The states sent them a lot of money. I mean, again, as a consumer, you should be ticked that you're not getting those fat tax breaks. Well, this is part of where that comes from. Honda and General Motors announced they were ending a $5 billion plan to develop lower cost EVs together just a year after announcing the effort. GM said on Tuesday it would focus on near-term EV efforts on meeting demand rather than hitting specific volume targets. They're cutting back on it. And let me tell you, they're going to say, oh, it's high interest rates. Oh, it's all these things. Gosh darn it, just the market conditions. First of all, public doesn't want your new Coke. Public doesn't want your snake oil. That's why. That's why they're cutting down. It's even hitting the king, Elon. This is what Elon said. He said, quote, I'm worried about the high interest rate environment that we're in, as I just can't emphasize enough that the vast majority of people buying cars worry about the monthly payments. If interest rates remain high, or if they go even higher, it's that much harder for people to buy the car. He just now gets it. It's that much harder for us to buy everything. I mean, I apologize. I did not, when they asked for my major in college, I did not major in richest man in the world. I should have, but I didn't. But That's everything. And they're going to blame it on, oh, it's just the high interest rates. No, no, it's your terrible product. It is you making something and forcing it down the throats that we just don't need. And they're going to shift the blame and they're going to keep taking the money. How many billions have we already given up on this, by the way? I mean, to get F-150 Lightning down to only $90,000, when really it's about $170,000 to make the car. How many billions? Well, I guess not that many billions because no one's buying them. I'd encourage you. There was a gentleman that tried to take his family from Canada to, I want to say it was Disney World. Or no, just to Chicago. That's right. From like Alberta, middle of Canada, down to Chicago. And he's like, oh, we'll take the brand new F-150 Lightning. Read the story. Google it if you doubt the claim. Read what he did. But I share all this with you because not only do we need to come wise to the schemes that they're doing, and Jason talked one there, and I'll get to it in a little bit, but the schemes that they're doing have nothing to do with the causes that they say. It's no surprise that the Green New Deal people just so happen to coincide with Marxist, Leninist, communist stuff. And I know, put the tinfoil hat on me again all you want. I don't even care anymore. Because that is what is happening. That is what we're witnessing right here. And I have a paper here, proves it's about to get worse. You don't know it, boys and girls, but you are smack dab right before the biggest environmental convention in the world. They do it every year. That's right. It's called the COP condition. COP, I'm not making it up. Look it up. This one's 28. That means they've had 27 previous ones. And let me just paint a picture for you. If you're John Kerry or John Kerry's staffer or John Kerry's pet poodle or John Kerry's pilot, every year you take a break from your sailing and your, punching poor people in the face, and you jet off to an exclusive resort. Last year, I think it was in Edinburgh. Year before that, it was in Cairo. It's fantastic. And you get to go there and you get to have brilliant big thoughts and brilliant big ideas about how we're going to save the earth. We're going to save the planet. And the United Nations puts it on that you and I pay for it. And so when you take a look at what they're going to do at the end of November, today's vomit warning brought to you by the Biden administration's proposal to put the World Bank in charge of a fund that would pay poorer countries suffering irreversible climate change is threatening to rattle UN climate talks that begin next month in Dubai. Let me paint the picture for you, boys and girls. At the last COP27, they decided to start handing out climate reparations. What's a climate reparation, you ask? I'll tell you what it is. It is a global shakedown of your money. Your money, my money, at this point, our great-grandchildren's money. Because we have to help the poorer nations. Irreversible climate change. But now the grifters are fighting among themselves. But the price tag right now, as we sit here today, and we know, just like the Ford F-150, it's not the real price tag. The price tag is $100 billion. Think about that right now. Joe Biden is trying to push a bill through. I think it's $105 billion. That's going to help Ukraine. That's supposed to help Israel. That's supposed to take care of the border. That's even so. I think it's $7 even for Taiwan in there. And just in that, your tax dollars and mine are going to go to climate reparations so that poorer countries can fix the weather with money. These are the people we're dealing with. But there's trouble in paradise. And I'm sorry, I know I jumped from thought to thought. I'm going to keep jumping from thought to thought. As this COP28 approached, the headlines I've read are Middle East turmoil threatens to undermine message of COP28. They look at what is happening in the Middle East, innocent civilians being butchered, and they're like, what is that going to do for our vacation? What is that going to do for our climate time? Who told Hamas to do it right before our climate vacation? I wonder if Hamas buys carbon credits. We probably give them the money to do it. The negotiating team, ready for it, led by climate envoy John Kerry, reluctantly endorsed the idea of establishing a fund for, quote, loss and damage, end quote, suffered by developing nations at UN climate talks last year. But we conveniently left out the details. Can you imagine John Kerry, with all his millions and billions, literally said, we'll get you the money, check in the mail, maybe. I don't know, UPS, did we send it? I don't know. Did we send it? He literally did not give him the information about it. But what here it is. So the grifters are all fighting with each other because the United States says we should put it in the World Bank so that Joe Biden and his cronies can grift over it. The grifting countries that are going to shake us down for money say, no, don't put it there because then you guys end up getting it. So we want to grift it here. And so we've reached the stage, and probably had years ago, but now it's much more in the open. We've reached the stage where the climate grifters are fighting over themselves how much they're going to grift each other now. When they're saying that John Kerry is not spending enough on climate, imagine how insane that is. John Kerry not spending enough on climate, according to these countries, because they're all going to come for our money. And I just want to tie it with this bow. They're never going to be satisfied. You will never get anywhere with appeasement because today's 100 billion will be tomorrow's 250 billion, will be, next week's trillion. It is a shakedown. It is a grift, and it is costing us every single day. You're supposed to give up your gas stove. You're supposed to give up your gas-powered car. You're supposed to give up everything that makes your way of life possible, and you're supposed to be happy to send it to a country that has been, quote-unquote, irreversibly harmed by climate change. And don't worry, John Kerry will make sure the money gets there. That's the reality of the world that they live in. And you know what? It gets really worse if it doesn't. Jason mentioned this, and I'll put a finer point on it. This was last year, last November. There is an actual group. I'm not going to give the satisfaction of mentioning their name, but they put out rankings. Yeah, I bet you didn't know this. Companies have all kinds of rankings, right? Best service, best customer satisfaction, best hamburger this side of Mexico, all kinds of great ratings. This is the world's most obstructive companies on climate policy. And you go to this group's website, they literally say this with a straight face. We're a nonpartisan think tank that advocates for, nonpartisan. Please, please, please. So they put out a naughty list. They put out a naughty list of companies, and the companies are fighting to stay off the naughty list, right? Number one on the naughty list is Chevron. How dare they have oil? And no surprise, 10, they have the top 10 naughty list here. That's what I'm calling it. And was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them are United States of America. You know who the top car manufacturer is on the naughty list? Jason just mentioned it. It's Toyota. This was a year ago. This was them saying to the world, Toyota, you are not doing enough. You are not embracing the cult enough. You don't have enough indulgences, because Toyota had the audacity to say, this EV thing may not work out. The people who brought you the Prius, probably the best-selling virtue signal eco car before Tesla came along, the leftists say they weren't good enough. You got put on the naughty list. So they want to avoid being put on the naughty list. And this is part of their issue, right? This is public shaming if you don't agree to the green climate cult. They will publicly shame you, and they'll put your company there. And maybe, next time that bailout comes around, it's not there for you and me because you've been on the naughty list. Were you caught driving a gas-powered vehicle? I'm not going to mention the other companies on here because I'm sure they don't like being on the naughty list. But this week, Toyota came out and did a little again, not an American company, but came out and did a little told you so, as all these other guys did all those EV cancellations that I mentioned to you. There's a little bit of I told you so. This is not the all being solution that Joe Biden and John Kerry would have us believe. Speaking of all buying solutions, this is where we end the week, and it's something I'll be the first to admit, it's something you already know. Prices are through the roof. The cost of goods and services rose 0.4%. Now, this is a government number. We know it's higher, but that was for the second consecutive month in September, and it's challenging the view that the Federal Reserve's tax rate hikes are bringing down inflation. I hate that I arrive at this point every week, but who we vote for matters. And when we go to the ballot, and yes, president matters, Congress matters, Senate matters, all that matters. But also your local school board matters. Your local city council matters. I don't care if it's like dog catcher or the water district board. These things matter. Because when you have this coalition of green cults that says it's okay to undermine one of our nation's top industries, we've seen the results. This is your free trial of the Green New Deal over the last 2.5 years. How's it working out for you? I'll tell you right now, it's not working out well for me and my family. And so I know a lot of you are living near the edge of being able to afford the things that your family needs. And to that I say, keep it up. I know it doesn't seem like it's worth it sometimes, but keep it up because better days are ahead. There's a new speaker. He understands energy better. And more of us are waking up to the fact that the Green New Deal is harmful, not only to our wallet, but to our country and to our standing in the world. And on that happy note, thanks for listening. We'll be a little happier next week, or maybe we won't. But either way, I'm glad you're here. This is Larry Behrens with Power of the Future. You've been listening to Power Punch. Catch you again next time.
Get more Power Punch at newstalkstl.com. This is Power Punch with Larry Behrens on News Talk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.